Hi, and welcome to week 3 of the Introduction to Information Systems. I hope you're enjoying it so far, learning about the overview and the hardware topics, and we're going to jump in this week to the software topics. And I'd like to first just start us off with a little prayer, if you don't mind. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray that you would look over each student this week and bless them with what's happening in their lives as they are studying and learning. Bless them to help them understand the information and to be able to carry it into their workplaces and their families to glorify you and to bless you and to create great opportunities for themselves and for others with new information. We know that every time we learn, you are leading us somewhere, and we are happy to follow and learn together. So again, we are grateful. We know you're here as and looking over us as we are learning, and we just thank you for being a part of our lives and a part of our learning every day. This course is no exception. So we appreciate and we love you, and in your heavenly name we pray. Amen. And again, this week we are jumping into the software. As you remember, there were 5 components of information systems, and this is one of them. There we go. This video, this week, we've got some goals here for us, for ourselves. Here's our learning objectives. We are going to be able to define what is software as part of technology and information systems. We're going to be able to describe the 2 primary categories of software. We're going to look at ERP software and see what kind of role that plays in an organization. We're also going to describe cloud computing and its advantages, its disadvantages, what is cloud computing, when you put something in the cloud, like where does it go? We're going to talk all about those things, and then defining open source and closed source softwares and talk about their characteristics and which ones we should know about, which ones should be on our radar, all those kind of things. So buckle up. Recap. Again, there are 5 components of information systems. Software is one of those 5 components. Hardware, we talked about that one last week, and all those things that go together to make the physical stuff you can touch as part of technology. This is going to be the set of instructions that tells the hardware what to do. So a software is going to be the instructions that tells the brain, the CPU, the hardware, what to do. Again, we have the data, the people, and the processes as well, but this week we're really going to hone in on the software piece, okay? We are looking at software in 2 different categories. So there's all kinds of software, right? When you're running programs on your computer, it used to be like if you would go and buy a floppy disk or buy a CD of something that you wanted to run on your computer, if you wanted to be able to do your taxes online, if you wanted to play a game, if you wanted to, any of the things that your computer can actually do. Okay, that's going to be what we're talking about with software. And that software, again, is in 2 categories. And that's going to be, operating systems and applications. Many of you probably are familiar with what your operating system is that you're running right now. I am currently on my Mac laptop, and I'm running an OS X operating system. Some of you might be running a Windows operating system. If you are watching me from your phone right now, if it's an iPhone, you might be having an iOS system. You might be having an Android operating system. Any one of these will fall under this category. And then we're going to also talk about applications. And so we're going to jump right in. Operating systems. What is that? And that's going to be, it manages the hardware resources. It's the thing that talks to the machine. Okay? It's giving the instructions to the hardware. So it's managing that hardware relationship between the software and the hardware, this operating system. It provides the user interface components. So when you interface, when you communicate with that machine, you're doing so through that proxy of an operating system. It's becoming easier and easier to do so. So much so that now you can say, "Hey Siri, set an alarm for 2 minutes." And she will automatically hear you, and as part of that operating software, operating system, she will tell the hardware what to do to make that alarm sound in 2 minutes. That is going to be that user interface component, which at this point we can just verbally many times be able to do that with smart components, smart cars, smart homes, all these things. And then the third part of an operating system is this is where the developers, we talked last week really heavily about binary code and how that is used for communicating volumes of information, of storage, of data. It's also the language used for programming. And so the operating system is what provides a platform for those developers of software to be able to write applications. And so operating systems, a couple examples we just talked about. Windows, iOS on your phone, OX on an Apple laptop or desktop computer. Might be DOS was very prevalent. Linux is going to be an open source software that many coders and people who are familiar with processing language and coding language prefer to use. And we'll talk all about open source in just a few minutes. But those are examples of kind of the brains of the software operation that's going to talk to the brains of the hardware operation, which if you remember is the CPU, the central processing unit. So the operating system is the kind of the brains of the software component. So that's one piece, one component of software is the operating system, one category. The other category of software is applications. Don't get this confused with just the little squares on your phone that you push and when you think of app. Those are applications, okay, those mobile apps on your phone, but this is much more broad than that. This is going to be any software that allows you to do something, to finish a goal, to accomplish a purpose. This is going to be anything you can do using the technology. Sounds simple enough, right? So an example of this would be, I need to do something, I need to write a paper. So I'm going to use the application of Microsoft Word to allow me to do that, to execute that command. So I'm writing a paper, that's what I'm doing, using the application of Microsoft Word. I would like to edit this video I took on my phone, or I'd like to edit this photo. I'm going to use the application of Photoshop to do that. I'm going to listen to this song. I'm going to use the application of iTunes or Media Player, depending on what kind of system you're running. And that's going to be, it allows me to do something, to accomplish a goal or a purpose. You know, I want to make a spreadsheet. I would use the application of Excel or Numbers. So we think about it's either the brains, the operating system, or it's going to be an application, these things that allow the tasks to take place. So you interact with applications all day, every day, most likely. Some of them are the apps on your phone. You need to get an Uber, you touch the Uber app. You need to have a burger delivered to your house in the next 30 minutes, you go to DoorDash or Uber Eats or whatever the app is to get that task accomplished. Okay? But it doesn't have to just be the apps on your phone, like we said. This is anything that allows you to do something. I want to read a book. I open up my e-reading app. application to do so. This term killer app, this came to be in the last 10 years or so. This is something that is so essential that tons of people will go buy a device just to run that one application. An example of this would be Excel. Once home computing really became a thing and spreadsheets became what spreadsheets are, there were people who would buy a computer for the opportunity to run that application of being able to they want that device to run that application of spreadsheets. So there's many offices where that's the only thing those computers do is Excel. So that would be a killer application. If you've heard of that terminology before. Sounds scary. It sounds like a scary application. It's not. It's just really essential that people will line up and buy a whole device just for the capability of one thing they can do or thing they can accomplish by doing this. And we can zoom out on this one and really get some more examples. Maybe there's something that you have went and you purchased an entire device just to have access to complete one goal or one purpose. So think about that as we think of killer apps. Here's a good visual I would like to have you look at to really understand. So let's say you're at the top as the user. Let's say you're a home user, or maybe you're at work and your organization is using hardware. Okay, you're going to interact with that hardware through the application. And then the application is going to communicate with the operating system. The operating system, we already said, tells the hardware what to do. So it's going to communicate with the hardware. And then it's a big cycle, because then the hardware is going to communicate back to the operating system, which then informs the application back to the user. So let's put this into practice, okay? So we see user, application, operating system, hardware. So this would be if we are, let's say we're writing that paper, and we open up Microsoft Word. And so we are the user, and we open up the application, that's the next level, and that's going to be Microsoft Word. We are going to then input commands into this paper. We're going to write, we're going to push save, we're interacting with the application. So that operating system is going to then take that information and communicate. So the application communicates with the OS, the operating system. The operating system then communicates with the hardware. Because remember, as part of hardware, our memory and our processing speed and our storage was all part of the hardware. So you push save on the file, so that operating system is going to inform the hardware of where to put this piece of data. Are you putting it in short-term storage, like that prep table we talked about, or are we putting it in long-term storage back in the pantry, in the hard drive? Are we putting it on something removable, a flash drive, whatever that hardware is that you're telling that what to do? So the hardware is then going to communicate back to the operating system, which communicates with the application and back to the user, and you have your finished product. So it's a cycle of that line of communication that's happening between you and the hardware, because you can't take a finished product file and put it into the CPU unit of your computer and know that it's stored. You have to certainly talk through the application. Maybe you're going to scan in an image file, and you want it scanned and you want it saved somewhere, and you want to edit that document. You're going to work through applications, through your operating system, to the hardware, and then right back to you. So I hope that makes a lot of good sense to you of how we communicate with the machines around us and the technology that's, you know, making life easier for us every day. It's how we can communicate with the machines, and the machines communicate back with us. So next, we are going to talk about those little squares on your phone that are our mobile applications and what it means to have cloud computing. Okay. A little story for you, a little story time. I was preparing actually to talk to you, and I was preparing to talk all about information systems and had dozens of slides prepared. And I have an Apple laptop, and it was Apple Update Day. And long story short, just before I was saving the pieces of information to my desktop, to that long-term pantry storage. And it was Apple Update Day, and the operating system updated itself, okay? And it messed with my Adobe Flash that I needed for one of the videos that I have recommended for you to watch. And so I very foolishly, looking back, reverted to a previous version. So using the operating system, I went back through to a previous version of my hard drive. So it went back about 21 days from the last time I had backed it up. So it totally rewrote those files in the long-term hard drive, that SSD pantry storage, okay? And so, long story short, every bit of work I had done was completely gone. It had been totally rewritten to 21 days prior. And so I had learned a very valuable lesson at that time of why cloud computing could be so, so vitally important as you're working on something. And we can talk about why cloud computing has so many wonderful things about it that help us move forward. Had I been saving my document to the cloud, whether that be a personal cloud or a third-party cloud like Amazon Web Services, or some people choose to have their own private cloud if they need more storage and more security on their documents. But certainly, had I done that, I wouldn't have lost weeks of work with one swoop of the finger. Tip, saving that. As we talk about cloud computing, there's no software to install. You don't have to upgrade it. You don't have to maintain it. It is a separate space, a separate server that's separate from your system. So this is my laptop right here. If I push save on this laptop and I save it to the cloud, it's not saved on the hardware. Okay, it's not part of this local storage in terms of those definitions that make up a piece of hardware. It's in the cloud, so that is being stored in a separate location on a server. And so you don't have to upgrade it. You don't have to maintain it. And you can access that information from any computer that has an internet connection. So it doesn't have to be from the computer where you wrote the document or you made the spreadsheet or you uploaded the image or whatever you're trying to do. You can do it from anywhere, from any computer. So that's definitely a benefit of using cloud computing, of doing processing off-site and not in your machine, okay? It can scale up to a large number of users. Where if I'm giving a training, or if I have a bunch of new teammates coming on in my organization and I want to share what I'm doing on my desktop, that's going to be really hard for me to start sending files and making sure I input everyone's email address that's now part of the team. If it's on the cloud and you're doing cloud computing, those people can remotely, we said it could be from anywhere, so any one of their computers, as long as they have an internet connection, can access that data if they have the credentials and really be up and running really quickly with new users and new applications as all part of our suite of services. And so those services can be leased for a limited time, just as needed. I can use the cloud, you know, I don't have to commit to weeks or months part of, you know, a contract of cloud computing. I can store and lease space as needed. The next pro about it is one that I feel very passionately about now, as you can imagine, which is that your information isn't lost. If somebody steals my laptop or I'm taking a drink of this water and the entire bottle spills on the motherboard of my computer and all that bus power. So the bus is where your connections are made. All that bus power is lost. If that happens, if somebody steals it, if it crashes, if I accidentally light a fire right here on my laptop, my information that is processed would still be safe on the cloud. It's on a separate third-party server. Also, if you have cloud computing, it really helps you to not have those limitations of how much storage or memory space is available on your computer. You can have access to as much memory and storage space as you need on the cloud, and you're not limited to what your machine can handle in this very limited space. So there's definitely some advantages of cloud computing. Likewise, there are some disadvantages of cloud computing. And I'm sure the first one that comes to mind is that if my information isn't here on my screen, where is it? Like, where is the cloud? Who has access to my information? Is it really safe? Is it really secure? Is it where it says it's going to be? This level of trust that we've had to really build as the technology grows to know where that processing is actually happening. The advent of those personal servers that we talked about, if you want a private server that is just a cloud for your information only, a lot of people feel more comfortable doing it that way. And I'm a proponent of cloud computing. I know that there are certain applications that would not allow. My sister works on a military installation where they do not participate in cloud computing, and things are done on a very local level for security, understandably so. So kind of you have to take into consideration, you know, what you're working on, the security needs, and weigh the advantages with the disadvantages of that mobile application of cloud computing and being able to do it on the go. If I'm away from my office and I'm not sitting here at my computer, I'm still able to do all the processing I need and store things where I need to. If I was, again, in a very information-sensitive organization, like the military installation I was mentioning earlier, not the best bet. So, again, it's weighing the pros and cons and seeing, you know, what your organization really needs to move forward. So after the cloud computing, I would like to talk to you about the open source software. And open source software is going to be software that makes the source code available for anybody to copy and use it. And there we go. So this open source software is free for everyone to use. It's usually, like, if you have, let's say you're operating Windows, and you have Microsoft Office Suite, which includes Word, and it includes Excel, and it includes PowerPoint, and it includes Outlook, and all these things that go into making software for business. That's going to be, you know, these productivity applications and softwares. You don't actually own that software just because you own your computer. You're leasing a license. You're purchasing a license for that software, which means you don't own it. You can't copy it and give it to someone else. You can't break it down to the source and change it and make it Emily's version of Excel with changes and tweaks in the source code. It's just not possible. It's proprietary to who built the software, and you are using a license of that software for a certain amount of time. I don't know how old you are watching, but you might remember of uploading, and you had to reboot and purchase, you know, different applications. For instance, with my Mac, with my Apple computer, I did purchase the suite of app of Microsoft Office products, which are now part of my computer because I have leased the license on those things. I don't own them. With open source software, it makes it available for anybody to copy it, to use it. You can, for most people, for you and me, most likely, I don't want to speak for you, but for most people, like myself, you know, we're not a programmer, so we're not a software developer and programmer, so having the source code wouldn't really be very useful, but there are some people that can have that open source software and build upon it and use the source code for building applications, for building software. Some very famous ones you might be familiar with that were open source software that are now really heavily used are the Firefox browser. Some of you are using Chrome, you might be using Safari, you might be using Firefox. Firefox was an open source software that was built using this free code. So it's not owned, it's for everyone. The Linux operating system as well. So many coders and developers prefer to use a Linux operating system because it gives them the freedom to build using that source code that would not be in a more traditional operating system like an iOS or a Windows system. The Apache web server is going to be one of those definitely needed. Definitely started with the source code that was free for everyone, and then as developers looked at that source code, they were able to build and expand upon that. So that is the open source software as opposed to the closed source software, which is the traditional stuff you buy and you license it for a short amount of time. It's made to make a profit. Somebody developed it and then they developed it and they want to get paid for it as opposed to some of these other open sources are made for really complex computing machines that are already very, very expensive. So the goal is to have the software be really accessible for everyone. Okay. Summarizing what we've talked about here is that, again, if it's a piece of software in MIS, in information systems, the software gives the instructions telling the hardware what to do. There's two basic categories of software, operating systems and applications. The operating systems, like we talked about, are kind of the brains. They do the communicating, and the applications are executing tasks. You do a specific goal, you accomplish a goal, and that's the application to meet a specific goal. So that is our summary. Week three that we're just finishing here discussing our software, there is a very main software called ERP and Enterprise Resource Planning. And those ERP softwares are something we're going to jump into and get into them all by themselves because it is quite an undertaking, and so we will be talking about ERP as we move forward in the course, and that's going to be definitely falling under the hardware umbrella, I'm sorry, the software umbrella, but kind of we're putting it on its own week just because there are so many components involved, and your organization is most likely using an ERP system in some way or another. As a consumer, you are communicating with ERPs all the time from other organizations. So we're going to jump into that in just a few weeks. So I'd like you to thank you for hanging with me and talking all about software and what makes up the software and what doesn't and all of those things. And next week, we're going to jump into the data and databases about, which is another component of information systems. So the data and the databases will be the last part of the technology, because you remember the technology umbrella has hardware from last week, software from today, and then the data and databases that we're going to talk about next week. So I really look forward to jumping into that with you. I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope that you're gaining some clarity on how these pieces kind of work together. We're looking at them individually right now, before the end of the course, we will be looking comprehensively at how they all do come together and advance information systems forward. So thank you so much, and I will see you next week.